Hello, I'm ISS's Global Head of Research, Georgina Marshall, and welcome to our April Bulletin podcast for the Americas region. On this podcast, you'll hear from a group of experts, including our US research head and three of our senior analysts, about meeting logistics, emerging trends, and key ballot items that will impact the upcoming proxy seasons in Canada and the US. The team will also offer some sneak peeks at some AGMs that will likely be high-profile events over the next few weeks and months. The 2021 proxy seasons in Canada and US, of course, are taking place in the shadow of the COVID-19 pandemic again. While health and safety concerns will mean most companies will hold their spring shareholder meetings virtually, we are not seeing the wave of meeting postponements that forced the 2020 seasons into overtime. Before we begin, let me introduce you to today's presenters from around North America. Today's lineup includes mostly familiar voices from prior bulletin previews, but also introduces a new ISS colleague who joins us for the first time on a bulletin podcast. So today we'll be hearing from a trio of members of our US research team: Mark Goldstein, head of US research, Liz Williams, a senior member of the US compensation research team, and Enver Fitch, leads our group of environmental and social specialists in the US research team. First, we're going to hear from Shabano Khan, senior analyst in our Canadian research team based in Toronto, who joins us for the first time on a Bulletin podcast. Welcome, Shabano. How is the 2021 Canadian proxy season shaping up at this point, and what are the expected peak dates and weeks?
Thanks, Georgina. In the Canadian market, we expect to see meeting volumes grow during April and reach a peak in early to mid-May. You should see the heaviest volumes begin for meetings on May 4th and run through the second week of May. Right now, it looks like May 6th, 12th, and 13th will be the busiest days in terms of meetings.
Okay, and are there any coming high-profile meetings with pay-related issues on the agenda you want to flag?
Yes, actually. So pay at the Bank of Nova Scotia, which is also known as Scotiabank, one of Canada's top five banks, looks to be in the spotlight at its April 13th meeting. In last year's report, we highlighted that our quantitative pay-for-performance model triggered a medium level of concern at Scotiabank. Specifically, the company's operational metrics somewhat underperformed its peer group. Support for the management say-on-pay proposal in 2020 was 93.8% of the votes cast, which was lower than the other banks in Canada last year. This year, our concern level rose too high due to continuing misalignment. This high concern was further validated following additional quantitative and qualitative analysis, which showed that the bank underperformed its peers in terms of operational and financial performance. While the CEO's total direct compensation decreased by 7% over the last fiscal year, the bank's 1, 3, and 5-year TSR was the lowest among its banking peers, and its CEO pay was ranked near the top of the comparative group. So this is definitely one meeting to keep a close eye on.
Thanks. What about shareholder proposals in Canada so far this year? What are the leading topics you're seeing?
It has been an interesting year for shareholder proposals in the Canadian market. While numerous shareholder proposals were filed at the big banks, many of these resolutions were negotiated away, and only a few of them have made it onto ballots. At National Bank of Canada, for example, all 7 shareholder proposals submitted to the bank were withdrawn following talks. To the best of our recollection, this appears to be a record number of withdrawals in the Canadian market. We'll never know for certain, however, since some proposals are withdrawn before they become public knowledge. Proponents have also filed a couple of new types of shareholder proposals this year in the Canadian market. One proposal is an apparent offshoot of a shareholder proposal first seen in the US in 2020, that stemmed from the Business Roundtable's revised statement of purpose, signed by 181 prominent CEOs. The proposal asks companies to redefine their corporate purpose to include all stakeholders, including customers, employees, suppliers, communities, and shareholders. It also asks companies to make recommendations on specifically how the purpose of a corporation can be fully implemented by the board and management. This new proposal was on the ballot at Cogeco's AGM on January 15th, and it received support of less than 1% of the votes cast. It has also been filed at Cascades Incorporated, which will hold its meeting on May 6th, and at Royal Bank of Canada and Laurentian Bank of Canada. with the meetings to be held on April 8th and 6th, respectively. And another proposal that is the first of its kind in the Canadian market was submitted by TCI Fund Management Limited at the Canadian National Railway Company. This proposal requires the CN Police Service to request the RCMP to conduct a criminal investigation in cases of workplace death or serious injury.
Very interesting. Thanks, Shabana. And have you seen proposals on environmental and social concerns?
Yes, Georgina, we have. In a first for the Canadian market, shareholders will get a chance to vote on the Canadian National Railway Company's Climate Action Plan at its AGM on April 27th. As the first company in the Canadian market to provide an advisory say on climate vote, CN will have the opportunity to set the stage and drive expectations surrounding climate risk disclosure and actions that need to be taken by boards to address the growing shareholder demands for companies to transition to more sustainable carbon footprints. While CN voluntarily adopted to give a say on climate advisory vote, TCI Fund Management Limited submitted a shareholder proposal at Canadian Pacific that requests disclosure of the company's climate action plan and annual opportunities for shareholders to vote on the approval of this plan and any future changes to it. The company's AGM is going to be held on April 21st. Another proposal that has been making the rounds this year and appears at most of the banking meetings, at the bank meetings, is the so-called circular economy proposal. The proponent, MEDAC, defines a circular economy as a system of production, exchange, and consumption aimed at optimizing the use of resources at all stages of the life cycle of a good or service using circular logic, while reducing the environmental footprint and contributing to the well-being of individuals and communities. The proposal requests that the bank report on loans granted in the last few years in support of the circular economy. However, there are complexities surrounding a clear definition of what a circular economy entails in the real economy, along with difficulty in tracking such activities across portfolios.
Thanks, Shabana. Now we'll move over to the US and our US research head, Mark Goldstein. Mark, what are expected to be the peak US meeting dates this proxy season?
Well, in terms of AGM volumes, the first big dates of the year in the US will be April 20th with more than 60 shareholder meetings and April 22nd with more than 50. Look for things to ramp up even further the following week with nearly 100 meetings on April 27th. More than 80 on the 28th, and more than 70 on the 29th. Proxies for May meetings are obviously still coming in, but the next big cluster will be May 4th with over 60 meetings, May 5th with nearly 80, and May 6th with close to 90. More than 60 meetings are already in the queue for each of May 11th, 12th, and 13th, and those numbers will continue to climb as more proxy statements are released.
Okay, thanks, Mark. It sounds like, as always, it will be a busy couple of months. What are some of the key meetings to watch?
Well, echoing Shabana's Canadian preview, some of the biggest banks in the U.S. Also face new shareholder proposals. Ballots at a quartet of big banks meetings in late April, Bank of America on the 20th, Citigroup and Wells Fargo both on the 27th, and Goldman Sachs on the 29th, will feature two new proposals calling for a racial equity audit and asking them to balance the interests of shareholders with those of other stakeholders by converting into Delaware public benefit corporations. My colleague Enver will have more to say about those proposals shortly. You'll notice that I didn't mention JP Morgan Chase, and that's because the meeting is expected to occur in late May and the proxy isn't out yet. Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson, which both hold their annual meetings on April 22nd, may have thought that their role in vaccine development would help them get in the good graces of social proponents. However, both companies will face proposals calling for reports on the steps these companies are taking to ensure access at reasonable cost to COVID-19 vaccines and therapeutic products. J&J also faces scrutiny due to the company's use of an adjusted earnings metric that excluded billions of dollars of litigation costs. We expect to see several Vote No campaigns targeting Say on Pay this year. First up is Marathon Petroleum, with a meeting on April 28th, where the proponent is raising human capital management concerns and highlighting the retirement package awarded to former CEO Gary Heminger. Next comes Park Hotels and Resorts, whose meeting is scheduled for April 30th. The proponent there is highlighting the near doubling of the CEO's compensation, despite the suspension of the dividend and widespread furloughs among workers at the hotel properties. And at General Electric on May 4th, the proponent is urging shareholders to vote against the say-on-pay proposal and also the five members of the compensation committee due to the replacement performance equity award granted to the CEO last summer. Big tech companies have been in the spotlight for the last several years over issues as varied as working conditions, protection of human rights and user privacy, content governance, censorship, and their role in the political process. That trend is likely to continue in 2021, but as of yet, neither Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, nor Alphabet has released its definitive proxy statement.
Thanks, Mark. And how about shareholder proposals on more traditional governance issues? What issues are getting the most attention from proponents this year?
Well, year to date, including meetings still in progress, as well as those already delivered, we're tracking 25 independent chair proposals, 17 proposals to amend the terms of a proxy access right, usually to get rid of the 20 shareholder aggregation limit, and 17 proposals to either provide a right to call a special meeting or lower the ownership threshold for using that right. But the most prevalent governance proposal this year is written consent. We're tracking 39 proposals, including those to establish the right to act by written consent and those seeking to lower the ownership threshold for requesting that the board set a record date for such action. The main appeal of written consent to proponents was that compared to special meetings, there was less of an opportunity for companies to attach restrictive conditions on timing and subject matter. But companies have imposed other restrictions, such as the ownership threshold for demanding a record date, and the proponents have turned their attention to trying to lower those hurdles. But as with the proposals to amend proxy access rights, these really haven't gained a whole lot of traction among investors to date.
And we saw a lot of poison pills introduced last year, of course, as the pandemic wreaked havoc in the markets and the broader economy, and some companies rushed to put in protections. Most of those pills were not put to a vote, and some really pushed the envelope when it comes to their terms. What's happening this year? Are boards renewing them or allowing them to expire?
Well, it really depends on whether the board thinks the threat has passed. So far, most boards appear to be allowing the short-term pills that they adopted at the outset of the pandemic to expire. But we'll take a close look at the handful of boards that extended their plans for additional time without putting those continuations up for a vote. One interesting development is that one of the most restrictive of last year's pills at the Williams Companies was struck down by the Delaware Chancery Court in February, due to the extremely low 5% trigger for activist investors and what the court called an expansive definition of acting in concert. Outside of Delaware, though, it's a different story. The pills at Maryland-domiciled Global Net Lease and American Finance Trust were arguably even more toxic than the one at Williams. Both featured not only 4.9% triggers, but also slow hand provisions that prevent redemption for half a year following a triggering event unless the continuing directors concur with the decision to redeem. In Maryland, dead hands and slow hands are still permitted, unlike Delaware. Both of those companies hold their annual meetings on April 12th, and even though the pills were renewed by each company back in February for a further 3 years, neither company is putting its pill to a vote at the annual meeting.
Right. Thank you, Mark. Let's turn to Liz and executive compensation next, always a hot topic. Liz, are there any interesting US trends so far or meetings to highlight for compensation?
One recurring topic that we've seen this year is investor concern over the impact of large litigation settlements on executive compensation. By way of background, four companies involved in manufacturing and distributing opioids, J&J, Cardinal Health, AmerisourceBergen, and McKesson, reached a tentative agreement towards the end of 2020 to settle opioid-related lawsuits with aggregate payments from the four firms totaling $26 billion. The settlement resulted in extraordinarily large litigation-related expenses being reported for these companies in 2019 and 2020. $4 billion for J&J, $6.6 billion for AmerisourceBergen, $5.6 billion for Cardinal Health, and $8.1 billion for McKesson. It's not unusual for incentive programs to exclude the impact of litigation payments and other one-time or unexpected events, But in this case, the size of the payments are incredibly large. As a result, investors are likely to scrutinize proxy statement disclosure regarding executive compensation and how the compensation committee considered the settlement payments.
Oh, indeed, Liz. Thank you. Sorry, I was on mute. What kind of response have you seen so far from investors on this subject?
So far, members of the Investors for Opioid and Pharmaceutical Accountability Group have conducted Vote No campaigns urging investors to vote against the say on pay proposals at Cardinal Health and AmerisourceBergen. At both companies, the primary concern was that excluding the impact of the settlement charges from the short-term and long-term incentive programs essentially insulated executives from accountability. Vote results from the say on pay proposals for the two companies suggest that this issue has really struck a chord with other investors as well. Cardinal Health say on pay proposal received support from a pretty low 61.4% of votes cast, while AmerisourceBergen's proposal received only 51.6% support, only narrowly scraping a majority.
And you initially mentioned four companies to watch that were part of the global opioid settlement. When will the remaining two companies be holding their meetings?
So the upcoming meetings to watch for are at Johnson & Johnson, as Mark mentioned, whose annual meeting is coming up shortly on April 22nd, and at McKesson later this year. They haven't scheduled their 2021 annual meeting yet, but I would expect it to be around the same time as the 2020 meeting towards the end of July.
Okay, great. Thank you, Liz. And now let's finish our tour of the upcoming US season with Enver Fitch, who leads our group of specialists on ENS-related topics. Enver, last year, the majority of all US shareholder proposals submitted related to environmental or social issues. Do you expect to see similar levels of ENS proposals this year?
This proxy season, we're seeing a substantial increase in the number of environmental and social shareholder resolutions filed. We're tracking nearly 500 ENS-related proposals filed so far, which is already higher than 2020's full calendar year total of 445. In fact, it's the largest volume since 2017, when 494 ENS-related resolutions were filed. It's very likely that this year's tally of ENS proposals filed will materially surpass that previous high watermark by year's end. Significant withdrawals following settlements and exclusions driven by SEC no action relief reduced the total number of ENS proposals on ballots for meetings through the end of May to just over 100. However, we are also tracking 77 additional ENS proposals at companies that have May meetings that have not published their proxy statements yet.
And social issues really came to the fore last year, of course. What's expected to be the top social issue of the year as reflected in shareholder proposals?
Yeah, topping the list of social issue proposals filed this year are resolutions addressing human capital management concerns with a focus on diversity and racial equity. After the killing of George Floyd and others brought this issue of systemic racism to the forefront, many companies issued statements of support for racial justice and equality. Some shareholder proponents are now asking for greater corporate transparency and have filed a new type of proposal asking companies to conduct racial justice audits to evaluate how institutionalized racism impacts their policies and business practices. Led by the New York City Comptroller's Office, several proponents, including Trillium Asset Management, the AFL-CIO, and AsYouSow, have intensified their filings of shareholder resolutions asking for disclosure of diversity in the workplace and in executive positions. Roughly 80 proposals have been filed on this topic. 35 of these resolutions seek more information on efforts to diversify the company's workforce and how they're addressing inclusion. These proposals will be going to a vote at Berkshire Hathaway and American Express, whose meetings are coming up on May 1st and May 4th, respectively. The proposal will also appear at Union Pacific Corporation and United Parcel Service, which both hold their annual meetings on May 13th. Another 45 proposals ask companies to adopt a policy to annually disclose an EEO-1 report. This Equal Employment Opportunity Report, also known as an Employer Information Report, is a survey U.S. businesses above a certain size must fill out containing employee data such as race, gender, ethnicity, and job category. Proponents say that EEO-1 reporting gives investors a comprehensive workforce breakdown by race, ethnicity, and gender according to 10 employment categories, including senior management. While a majority of these EEO reporting proposals have been withdrawn, several will appear on ballots, including at Charter Communications, whose meeting will be held on April 27th, DuPont with meeting date of April 28th, and Union Pacific Corporation. Several proposals also are pending, including at McDonald's and Lowe's Corporation.
Thanks, Enver. And moving on to the E in ESG, what climate-related and other environmental topics are expected to be widespread this year?
In terms of numbers, climate change risk-related proposals come in second place with 85 proposals filed to date. However, over half of these resolutions have been withdrawn or were omitted, leaving only 15 proposals on ballot so far. Another 19 are pending at companies with late May and June meetings. 35 of the climate change proposals ask for reporting on greenhouse gas emissions, reduction plans, and targets aligned with Paris Agreement goals. Four of these proposals will be coming up for a vote at General Electric on May 14th, ConocoPhillips on May 11th, Phillips 66 on May 12th, and UPS on May 13th. And as Shirbano discussed for Canada earlier, a new type of shareholder proposal dubbed SAN Climate due to its similarity to SAN Pay has been filed at seven companies this year, asking them to issue climate transition a climate transition report and to provide shareholders with an advisory vote approving or disapproving the plan. These proposals are currently on the ballot at Charter Communications, whose meeting will be held on April 27th, S&P Global following on May 5th, and Union Pacific Corporation on May 13th. One of the proposals, which was filed in Moody's Corporation, was withdrawn after the company decided to put forward a management proposal providing an advisory vote on its climate plan, the first of its kind in the U.S. Moody's AGM is on April 20th.
And are there any other forms of climate-related shareholder activism or proposals expected this season?
Yes. Majority Action, a nonprofit shareholder advocacy group, is conducting a Vote No campaign at companies in four sectors, which it considers critical in terms of GHG emission levels: electricity generation, oil and gas, automotive manufacturing, and banks. The organization is urging investors to vote against the board chairman and lead independent directors at 20 companies, which it considers are failing to implement plans consistent with limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius.
And with a lot going on, are there any other types of shareholder proposals you're seeing that you think are worth mentioning?
Well, as Mark noted earlier, a number of proposals were filed at pharmaceutical firms this year, asking how and whether receipt of public funding for the development and manufacturing of the COVID vaccine will be factored into decisions that affect access, such as setting prices. In addition to Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer, which Mark discussed earlier, the proposal is pending at Merck, while it was withdrawn and omitted at Gilead Sciences and Eli Lilly, respectively. Finally, as both Shirbano and Mark noted earlier, several proponents have continued their campaign at companies that have signed the Business Roundtable Statement on the Purpose of a Corporation. The proposal argues that whenever the stakeholders' interests clash with those of shareholders, the companies will have to favor investors' interests. In contrast, if they convert to public benefit corporations, the proponents believe that companies can make real commitments to stakeholders and stop exploiting common resources and vulnerable populations to increase returns. The proposals have been filed at 19 companies and is currently on the ballots of Bank of America, whose meeting will be held on April 20th, Citigroup and Wells Fargo, both on April 27th, and Goldman Sachs on April 29th, while S&P Global, UPS, and 3M will hold their meetings in May.
Thanks, Enver. And that ends our North America Preview podcast. Thanks to our speakers, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We hope you find this podcast useful and informative. You can complete your preview of the Complete Americas by also downloading our Latin American Proxy Season Preview report, available via Proxy Exchange. Please do watch your emails over the course of the coming weeks for information on and links to other episodes of this season's podcast series. Our next scheduled podcast will preview the upcoming seasons in Europe and the UK. From all of us at ISS, thanks again for joining us, and please stay safe and secure.